Okay, hi everybody, and good afternoon. This is Michael. We are working on the Treatise on White Magic video commentaries, and we're dealing with rules for magic on the astral plane. We are in the 36th program of those particular rules, and we're working on Rule 10, in which we are doing the 20th program. We're dealing now with what is called the fallacy of repudiation. I think it's related to the great separativeness heresy, the great heresy of separativeness. Let us therefore study, he says, the types of mental energy with which the individual has to work and how this great heresy of separativeness and the fallacy of repudiation, as it is sometimes called, may be offset. Okay, so I make a little emphasis there. Fallacy of repudiation. Well, under the law of repulse, we will temporarily repudiate certain habits and tendencies within our nature which prevent soul realization, but ultimately we can repudiate nothing because we are ultimately, as being, we are all things. One of the first things we have to remember as we consider these types of energy, it's mental energy we're considering now, is that their trend and work can be grasped more easily in a larger sense in relation to humanity than can their effects in an individual use of mental energy. All right, let's see if we find that to be the case. Only a few human beings are as yet consciously using this type of force, and only a few can therefore understand what it really entails. Increasingly, men will come as units into possession of their intellectual heritage, but numerically speaking, scarce one in 10,000 is utilizing this inherent power and knowingly functioning in his mental body. All right, that's a very low percentage. Of course, as I say, this was written, not quite 100 years ago, but that is a low percentage. The great majority we find is functioning in that state of mind, feeling mind we call kama manas. So what are we looking at here? The types of mental energy with which the individual has to work. So let's remind ourselves of this by enlarging it a bit and put it in a different color. The types of mental energy with which an individual has to work, and then the study of the fallacy of repudiation. And I think we are certainly in all manners of racial and religious and ideological prejudice, we are suffering from the fallacy of repudiation. When, however, we look at humanity as a whole and cast our eyes back over the past racial development, we can see how mental energy has had a most definite effect and has produced outstanding results. here, I think it's a question of studying perhaps the history of ideas coming in with various civilizations and in various ages and the subcategories of those ages and how ideas have conditioned cultures, and civilizations. Excuse me. The use of two factors differentiates man from animal. Whether he uses them consciously or unconsciously, both are latent in the animal, but man is the only entity in the three worlds who can consciously reap the benefit from them. Now, there are other worlds, and there are worlds of superhuman evolution. As usual, a little problem there. In the worlds of superhuman evolution, many beings can consciously reap the benefit of mental activity and higher activities. So one of these factors is pain, and the other is the faculty of discrimination. Okay, this is very interesting because both of them can be related to the fourth ray and maybe, well, to the fourth ray for sure, and in the case of discrimination, to the fourth subplane of the mental plane. So, these two factors, I'll put it in, these two factors are related to the fourth ray and to the fourth subplane of the mental plane, whereon we find that particular power that we call discrimination. It's the plane bordering on the plane of higher mind. Through the means of pain and a subsequent process of analysis of relation plus memory and visualization, a man has learnt what to avoid and what to cultivate. You know, we might almost call this the guiding power of pain. Well, you know, what to avoid. When we, as a child, we touch something hot, touch the hot stove, burn our tongue or something on hot liquid, we learn to avoid that kind of relation, that kind of contact. We remember it, and we also see other factors which are related to it and maybe don't have to go through the same experience, but can generalize from the earlier experience. So this works in the realm of physical plane happenings and of sensory experience. There are also other and more subtle kinds of pain, and similarly we learn to avoid and cultivate less painful approaches. Through discrimination as to ideas and as to thought currents, man has learned to decide upon what to base his activities in all departments of human affairs, even though he has but an imperfect grasp as to the nature of ideas, and his application of the truth sensed is quite imperfect, we generalize what is good or bad, what is worth pursuing and not. So this discrimination, again, another way of guiding our progress on the path of life. Okay. So it's a, you know, choice is involved, and Libra and Mercury, and of course Saturn, the planet of choice. So we have here discrimination, Yes, and we have here pain. All right, this seems a particular way of learning on our planet of purifying pain and releasing sorrow, of releasing sorrow and purifying pain. But he tells us in Esoteric Psychology 1 that the fourth ray can lead to very rapid progress, or equally to a man becoming a ne'er-do-well. You know, whatever he touches, he doesn't do well. But on the other hand, this quickness of learning that can be associated with the fourth ray, the action, the reaction, the mercurial quality, this can lead to rapid progress. Okay, and it's the either-or. Which way shall we go? And obviously, man does not want to find himself eventually upon the left-hand path, heading towards disintegration as a member of the Black Lodge eventually. Rather, he would choose what is better if he knew the outcome. And there, with the fourth ray, is imagination, is the intuition, is some sort of guidance related to the future. Think about Sagittarius and how it is bringing in the fourth ray. It combines with the intuitive tendencies of Sagittarius to see the future, you know, intuitively, let us say. Okay, so anyway, I'll reread this. Through discrimination as to ideas and as to thought currents, man has learnt to decide upon what to base his activities in all departments of human affairs. Okay, even though he has but an imperfect grasp as to the true nature of ideas, and his application of the truth sense is quite imperfect. Nature of ideas, certain ideas are to be worked through into manifestation as part of the divine plan. And these he learns to support, even though he does not understand them fully. Right, but at least we are guided along the path. And it is, well, you know, with horses, they're in the field, but there's this electric fence around them, and they could easily jump over, you know, or they could just, it's not very strong, they could barge right through. But that sort of shock that repels them keeps them within the proper area. And thus it is for man. We are kept within the proper area, and we do not stray too far off the path of development, because it is painful to do so. It causes a certain rending, tearing process over which the fourth ray also presides. I'm thinking about that. You know, in the old days, they had cruel and unusual punishment, which at least in certain countries today is outlawed. So they tie you to four horses. There's the number four, and the horses would ride in opposite directions, and that was it. You know, it's called being drawn and quartered. And it, you know, you can be torn apart on this fourth ray if you wander too far off the path. Okay, so that man, that he often chooses unwisely, that the ideas governing group contact are not the highest, that public opinion is proverbially molded by personal and selfish interests, may be only too sadly true. I mean, there is a mass kind of Cancerian selfishness. It's operative. We see that in some of the younger souls. Well, maybe it's not confined to them, but certainly it's more natural to the people who have had less incarnational experience, they tend to opt easily for the selfish solution. We're seeing this right now. I'm doing this in the year 2018, and it's the end of August here. We see this in the United States at the moment. Maybe 30% of the people are opting for the really selfish, short-sighted solution under the impulse or stimulation of demagoguery. So yes, it's sadly true that personal and selfish interests often prevail. Okay. But nevertheless, through pain and learning to utilize the power of choice in the realm of ideas, man is steadily forging ahead towards full liberty, full control of the earth, which it is his right to inherit. We understand that eventually the so-called meek shall inherit the earth, but as Alice Bailey is at pains to explain to us, the word meek means those who are trained, and we are training ourselves in better discriminative choice and to avoid those conditions which so defy the natural method of progression that they become painful. Now just imagine a person actually holding his hand on that hot stove. You would have to be, It would be unnatural, or you would have to be proving a point, and it would be at extreme damage to your vehicle. Choice in the realm of ideas. Many old ideas exist still in form. The new intuitions which are guiding the progress and process of evolution are not yet precipitating into the minds of all human beings. A few visionaries have these, and they have to clothe them in mental matter in such a way that people begin to appreciate their value and will try to implement them. Okay, so the idea here is through pain and discrimination, we grow and we progress. We have an imperfect response to both of these. There are some people so masochistic that they will choose even the painful path in a very unnatural way, and they destroy their bodies and their psyche and so forth. And there are others who will only go with the old ideas or misappropriate the new ideas and fail to discriminate. What are the best ideas for the time? All of this is sadly true. The old commentary says, in relation to these two characteristics of man, pain and discrimination. I have to keep on reminding, because it's easy to forget as we are working through so many hundreds of pages of valuable teaching. Two characteristics of man, something that conveys much of beauty couched in symbolic language. The phrases run as follows, and it must be borne in mind, whilst pondering upon them, that water symbolizes sentiency or astral reaction, and fire is the symbol of mentality. I mean, water is also the symbol of matter and, also of the ethers of space. Water is a very generalizable term, but in this particular context, okay, water is sentiency and astral response, and fire is mentality. The assuaging cool waters, they slowly bring relief, abstracting form from all that can be touched. The quivering fever heat of long repressed desire yields to the cooling draft. Water and pain negate each other. Long is the process of the cooling draft. The burning fire releases all that blocks the way of life. Bliss comes and follows after the fire, and fire upon the waters. The burning fire releases all that blocks the way of life. Bliss comes and follows after fire as fire upon the waters. There is the sequence of purification, water first, then fire. Well, I'll read it. Water and fire together blend and cause the great illusion. Fog they produce, and mist, and steam, and noise, veiling the light, hiding the truth, and shutting out the sun. The fire burns fiercely. Pain and the waters disappear. Cold, heat, the light of day, the radiance of the rising sun, and perfect knowledge of the truth appear. This is the path for all who seek the light. First form and all its longing, then pain, then the assuaging waters, and the appearance of a little fire. The fire grows, and heat is then active within the tiny sphere and does its fiery work. Moisture likewise is seen, dense fog, and to the pain is added sad bewilderment, for they who use the fire of mind during the early stage are lost within a light illusory. Fierce grows the heat. Next comes the power to suffer. When the stage has been outgrown, there comes the shining of the unobstructed sun and the clear, bright light of truth. This is the path back to the hidden center. Use pain. Call for the fire, O pilgrim, in a strange and foreign land. The waters wash away the mud and slime of nature's growth. The fires burn the hindering forms which seek to hold the pilgrim back, and so they bring release. The living waters, as a river, sweep the pilgrim to the Father's heart. The fires destroy the veil, hiding the Father's face. And, you know, these are maybe different fires we're dealing with. This is a lengthy section. Maybe I can offer a few thoughts. And of course, I think you will want to interpret this yourself as well. Well, there is a condition of pain, of having done incorrectly. And as we even learn in physical plane life, that when we run water on a burning wound or some sort of harm that has been done to us, there is a cooling and pain is reduced. These are the positive emotions which gradually emerge. They slowly bring relief from life conditions, because we are on this planet of purifying pain, and the word pure is fire. It seems that there are certain kinds of fires which are fired by friction, and the waters follow that type of fire. There are other kinds of fire, like solar fire, or a more intense type of burning to bring relief, which follows the application of waters. This is found in the second initiation. There is the waters of purification come first, followed by the fires of purification, which bring a more complete liberation. There may be a kind of washing, rinsing, flowing away of dirt, obstructions, contamination through water, but the final liberation, the final decontamination, the final blocking or destruction of the obstacles is coming through fire. I'm remembering, you know, in the Mozart opera, The Magic Flute, which I ended up directing a couple of times. In the Egyptian rites, there is the test of water and then the test of fire. And the prince who is the candidate for initiation has to pass through both of them, along with his partner. So they slowly bring relief, abstracting form from all that can be touched. So we seem to have an elevation of the form away from the outer sensory world. And now we're in the astral body, the quivering fever heat. This is Mars, of long repressed desire. Maybe we're not aware of the desire. Usually repression is different from suppression. Suppression is a deliberate act, and repression is a kind of unconscious act. But nevertheless, these desires are not satisfied, and they are not necessarily for high things. They can be for low things, but the draft of a higher type of feeling, a higher type of astral sensitivity, a certain sentiency quiets the ardor of the Martian low desire, which must not continue to be satisfied because it does not lead upward. It does not lead to aspiration. Water and pain negate each other. This we even know physically, as I have said. Sometimes, you know, when there's a great irritation, which is again a Martian factor, and it has to do with the friction, fire by friction, and a chafing of things against one another, the application of water, whether cool water, warm water, it makes no difference, it soothes the irritation. One of the great causes of disease is that kind of irritation, that chafing, which leads to inflammation, and water can cool that. These are not the higher liberating fires we're talking about. These are lower fires. Long is the process of the cooling draft when we must apply the higher types of feelings and emotions to the more urgent Martian irritating propensities. The burning fire releases all that blocks the way of life. Now, after the irritation, the friction has been subdued by the cooling draft, and we live life not in such an urgent state to fulfill lower desire. The burning fire, it's a higher kind, releases all that blocks the way of life. This is the kind of fire that we find on the burning ground. And it's the way of life into the higher states, and life and being, in one way of regarding them, are the same. Bliss comes and follows after fire, because fire is going to burn up the perception of differences between things in the great illusion. And bliss is a supreme type of unity, a supreme type of perceived oneness. Oneness and bliss are inseparable. So bliss comes and follows after fire, as fire upon the waters. Waters are the first assuaging application. And then comes the fire. It's so, you know, in the second initiation experience and later with the third initiation and the overcoming or dispelling of illusion, bliss will follow. We have, happiness, joy, and bliss. And let's just say that fire releases into joy and eventually into bliss, where no isolated factor can destroy the perceived unity of things and the perceived oneness of things in which the observer is participating as that oneness. But water and fire, when coming together, produce, blend and cause the great illusion, or at least one of the interpretations of the great illusion. I think if we go to, here it is, in the Alice Bailey books, page Rays and Initiations, page 340, we're going to notice the way the initiations play out, and first will come dedication, which is the application of fire or mind to the emotional nature or to water and glamour, steam, noise, all of those disguising factors result, and it's cured by a devotion which becomes love. Some types of devotion, when blind, have their own problems, but this is a devotion is a general term which can be applied even to the higher sources, the devotion of the soul to its personality and to the plan, the devotion of the monad, a lord of ceaseless, persevering devotion to the lower lives, which must be redeemed. So at first, though, we have the effect, and we know that fire and water, even we know this physically, produce steam. They produce a reduction of visibility. And here we have, there are certain heat and cold conditions in moist air near the ocean and so forth, like the San Francisco fog, just about a daily happening. Fog they produce, and mist, blinding perception, and steam and noise. In other words, we don't hear anymore, or maybe we haven't yet heard it, the voice of the soul. We hear all of the lesser voices, which simultaneously heard become kind of a cacophony, a raucous type of noise which has no harmony in it. So at first, when these two very necessary methods of assuaging and liberation and reduction of the irritation of life come together, we will have an effect which is blinding and veiling. You don't hear the voice of the soul, and you don't see the soul. Veiling the light, capital L, the light of the soul, hiding the capital T, truth, and shutting out the sun in this case, which at first stands for the soul. So it may be that we are struggling to see the soul, as in the case of the second initiation, and we have that dedication followed by glamour, followed finally by devotion, which in that case is of the right kind and is liberating. But the first effect is not yet coming into the presence and receiving the undistorted impact of that which we seek, namely the impact of the soul. The fire burns fiercely. Well, every time we want to have a kind of liberation, of which initiations represent the higher kind, I guess we experience little liberations all the time, but some sort of mental process of a fiery nature occurs. And actually, this fire can be applied to all the elements of the personality. It can be applied to the way we desire, what we desire, what we reject, what we accept. It can even be applied to the physical body, and then you have, as in Agni Yoga, the sacred pains. Master Maurya talks about the nun who was moaning, "I burn, I burn," and yet there's no outward sign of it. And that is a liberating pain. It's not just the pain caused by wrong living and by unwise action. And just by, you know, well, DK talks about the dire pain of life itself on this non-sacred planet. So, you know, we cannot avoid the pain on this planet whose symbol is the cross, but that cross is finally encircled, and the encircling is a symbol of liberation in this case, and the rounding out and the unification of many things that were before that point in great painful friction. The fire burns fiercely. Pain and waters disappear because they are the methods. They are the methods by which we become aware that something must be done. The pain is certainly that prompting method. It forces our attention to an inharmony which must be resolved. And in a way, all inharmony is painful. When in music we run into dissonance, it is resolved in harmony, and there is a certain aesthetic release, or a release from aesthetic pain in that harmony. And the waters disappear because the attention is no longer dealing with the first soothing, we might say. We are rising up into the mental plane and the realm of the soul. Cold, clear cold light, the whole idea of a dispassionate attitude. And then the heat of liberative burning, to which you can remain cold even as it burns. There's a great distance that can be achieved on the Buddhic plane, or under the Buddhic impression. And the clear cold light is found there. We need the cold light of matter. The vehicles must become increasingly cold to all that stirred them before to low desire. The heat is of a higher kind as we cross the burning ground and we are beginning to enter the light of day. The light of day is the light of the soul, but it's also, interestingly, the kind of light associated with Scorpio. And that's the name of that particular light. And the Scorpio is ruling the Buddhic or intuitional plane. So we're on the clear, cold light becomes truly effective. So there's the clarity of intuition, the coldness of personality response to its usual promptings. It will respond later to higher things. And we make our way into a detached condition. Cold, heat. Now, you know, it seems contradictory, but both can be applied at once. The non-responsiveness eventually of the personality to its old Martian promptings, and the coldness of the attitude of the observer of this process, who knows he is something else. The heat of the burning ground, the light of day, the light of the soul, the light of the triad, especially the Buddhic light, the radiance of the rising sun. See, the light of day is not the full sight of the soul, perhaps, but things are dawning. The light is dawning. The light of the higher sources is dawning. The radiance of the rising sun, which is the sun of the soul, and perfect knowledge of the truth appeared. Now, I've got to write this down, I guess. Perfect knowledge of the truth is Buddhic. That's where real transcendental mind enters. Okay, so somewhere here is what we want. Okay, I've got so many different things. Okay. So this is the path. Well, let's look at that sequence, okay? The fires burn fiercely, pain and waters disappear, the personal pain, and DK instructs us as to how we may overcome pain through certain types of identification and through the entry into directly into pain until the pain disappears. I think he discusses that in Esoteric Psychology 2. Okay, this is the path for all who seek the light. First form and all its longing. And we might say, this longing does not lead to liberation. So there is, I suppose, an instinctual longing that applies to the fulfillment of those desires which have a strictly physical instinctual basis, but it's not the kind of intense longing of the astral body, which at first is not longing for liberation, but for satisfaction within the lower three worlds. Well, let's apply it to ourselves, you know. Where are we in this process? This is the path for all who seek the light. I mean, are we dealing with this irritating, frictional pain, which is the dire pain of life itself, especially in the lower worlds and confined to the personal spheres in the lower 18 subplanes? Are we learning detachment? Are we also walking the burning ground, which is breaking up the bonds between the bonds that help to create or sustain the forms which keep us from liberation? So when those bonds are broken, the form is going to disintegrate and we will be able to enter a state in which the form no longer blocks our perception or our participation. Does the light of day, is it coming into our mind? Are we accessing the intuition coming through the soul? Because the soul has its own type of lesser intuition, we might say. I'm not talking about consciousness within the causal body. Has its own type of lesser intuition, lesser than that which we find on the Buddhic plane. And then the sense of the great radiance rising within, whatever that radiance stands for. The sun can stand for the soul, as we usually conceive the soul. It can stand for the triad. It can stand for the monad and beyond, of course. And ultimately, in our solar system, it is the very solar logos itself. Is any of that happening for us? That's what we have to try to understand. First form and all its longing. Then pain. Why? Because the soul or spirit is not free and cannot withstand forever this lack of freedom. There is a desire to burst out. Then the assuaging waters, as the higher states of harmonious feeling enter, as the higher states of harmonious feeling enter, you know, music, art, beauty, these can help. Harmonious relationships, all this can help the assuaging waters to subdue the pain of the irritation of confined life. You know, when we're confined, we are rubbing up against our prison You know how some people thrown in prison, they throw themselves against the bars and they're always trying to break out and they damage themselves in the process. But eventually there's a way to slip through and beyond the bars of our own self-imposed prison. Then the assuaging waters and the appearance of a little fire. And we might say little of that liberating mentality, which later, under the impress of the soul, will bring freedom on the burning ground. Oh, yes. So what does he say actually up here? Water symbolizes sentiency or astral reaction, and the fire in this case is the symbol of mentality. Triple the call must be, and long it takes its sound to sound it forth. Let the disciple sound the call across the desert. That's that arid frictional place. Over all the seas, that's the astral waters, and through the fires which separate him from the from the door of liberation, I have to having a little memory issue here for the moment. Veiled and hidden door, and through the fires which separate him from the veiled and hidden door. There are the fires of mind, but then there are also additional fires that are applied on the mental plane to clarify one's thinking, disabuse oneself of imprisoning thought forms, and in generally open up the mind to the light of the soul. The fires will do this. You know, obviously, different people will interpret this in different ways, but you see that it does require the symbolic language here does require interpretation. The fire grows and heat is then active within the tiny sphere, we might say, of man's personality and does its fiery work. So let's just say the mind becomes more and more capable of illumination. Moisture likewise is seen, because in all of this burning, it's not that we yet have a real sight. Let's just say all of this commotion results in mental illusion and distortion. You know how it is when you try to see through the fog, the forms are distorted and unclear until the sun burns them off. Okay, I've got some little problems here telling me too much going on in my I'm going to just take a quick look, and that's 11 times, and we'll go over here. Bear with me, please. I just don't want to stop, and 15 times, and the time here is 14:49, and we're good. Okay. I have to keep on saving because my computer insists that it's too full. That's a hint. All right. So, going on. Dense fog, moisture, likewise, is seen. There is an evaporation which occurs. There's the formation of droplets in the air, symbolic language. The air, which should be penetrable by sight, is filled with moisture, which distorts and blocks. Dense fog, and to the pain is added sad bewilderment, we say, at least during part of the liberation process. For those who use the fire of mind during the early stage are lost within a light illusory. And, you know, sometimes we wonder, well, just how can people think the way they do? You know, they're forgetting this and that, and their premises are wrong, and their reasoning is wrong, and their conclusions are distorted, and blah, blah, blah. You know, those who are more experienced in the realm of mind see all the fallacies of mind created by those who at first illogically, we might say, use the fires of mind. So those who use the fires of mind during the early stage are lost in a light illusory. And this we find all around us, and it leads to all kinds of mistaken action, action that is not plan-related, action that is not harmonious with God's intention on this planet. But that's how it is. We're never as good in the beginning as we are later, and someone learning different sports within the Olympics is never as good as the person who is in their prime and still and has spent much time mastering the technique. Fierce grows the heat. Next comes the loss of the power to suffer. We might say because of decentralization and the realization that one is. The inner God. Okay, one is the inner God. So, you know, we are rising here above centralization within the astral body and even within the lower mind. Okay, so centralization, yes, there we are. And this is decentralization. Okay. When this stage has been outgrown, and we transcend all of the confusion, distortion, illusion, fragmentation, you know, those words which are characteristic of the normal thinking process of the normal person using the mind and sentiency in early stages, then when this stage has been outgrown, there comes the shining of the unobstructed sun and the clear, bright light of truth. So this is, let's call this soul consciousness. This is the path back to the hidden center, the monad. Path to the monad. So now the injunction, he's described the process, what we all go through, and now maybe we can, by a more deliberate working, a more deliberate utilization of the factors involved, maybe we can make faster, better, more intelligent, even less painful process, go through it quickly. You know, use pain. Don't be used by it. You know, so many of us are simply reacting to it rather than saying, okay, this is a method. And it is guiding me along a path from which I must not deviate. Call for the fire, O pilgrim in a strange and foreign land. Well, we are the pilgrim. The monad is the pilgrim. And it is immersed in the lower 18 subplanes. Pilgrim, yeah. Okay. The waters, am I going to be dealing with this all the time? All right, let's try. The waters wash away the mud and slime of nature's growth. Let's just say nature itself cannot be the cause of liberation. And we might say, you know, like barnacles on the hull of a ship. These are excrescences. These are unnecessary and inhibiting growths. So it's not clean. Not clean and not near enough to the higher, aspects of God. God is all these things, but we're talking about the pure fire of love, wisdom, intelligence, will, all these things. And in nature, we get very limited forms, fascinating though, in the garment of God, but limiting when it limiting the consciousness when the consciousness allows itself to be captivated by these forms. And the life process involves only the forms and not some type of more subtle awareness. Okay. The fires burn the hindering forms which seek to hold the pilgrim back and so bring relief. They destroy the bonds that hold the form together. So the fires destroy the bonds which hold the form together, and the forms disintegrate, and greater light can be seen as the obstructions clear. STR. The living waters, as a river, sweep the pilgrim to the Father's house or the Father's heart, not the early waters, but the waters of the cosmic ethers. They are waters too, as I said earlier, waters, the idea of waters, the symbol of water or waters, has several different levels of application. And we're talking about, you know, Uranus, Aquarius, and so forth, an air sign related to water ruling the cosmic ethers. So now we're starting to talk about these living waters, which are part of the life, more part of the life aspect, the principled life aspect of our planetary deity. So we are receiving the energies of the spiritual triad. We are receiving the energies of the spiritual triad. The fires destroy the veil, hiding the Father's face. And these are higher fires indeed, which are applied later on the atmic plane. Yes, on the atmic plane. Okay. Whew. I couldn't write all that, you know. And of course, we might say that something could be done for the coherence of what I just discussed, but I think you'll get some ideas and, of course, interpret it your own way as well. There are lower fires of irritation, you know. I forget, in homeopathy, there's some of the three causes of disease. I forget what the word is exactly, but it has to do with this kind of thing that irritates the skin and the process, and you have to scratch it. It's a very unpleasant thought. And life can be like that at first, but then there are fires of mind, and there are fires which involve the higher use of mind and the liberation into the light of the soul. And there are ongoing fires, solar fire of the soul, and the beginning of a combination of electric fire and solar fire in the triad, and finally electric fire in the monad, which will seek its own type of liberation beyond the subject matter here discussed. So that took a little while, and I think I might as well say that this will be the end of one program, since we're pretty well there. Excuse me. And then maybe DK will help explain some of this. So this is going to be the end of number 36. We're on rule 10, and we're on the 20th program for rule 10. And we've gone as far as page 3, looks like 359. Not a lot of time, but a lot of pages, rather. And today is the 29th of August. And then we're going to go into number 37 for the astral plane, and we'll begin in 359, and it'll be rule 10 and the 21st program for rule 10. Okay, friends, well, look, it's these are the thoughts that come to me. You know, obviously, if I was sitting down and writing a book of commentaries on this, and I have done that, some of that, more on the Makara website, in Cosmic Fire and the Raised Initiations, I've been quite careful about the language and spelling it all out in written form. But here, I find at this point in my life, I just need to sort of talk about these things. And if you want to listen through with me and use this as a stimulation for your own thought, your own apprehension of these matters, if you find it useful, then that's good. And otherwise, just, you know, do it your own way. It's okay. All right, then we'll go on to that shortly. And thank you for studying with me. See you soon.